You're on 121.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Welcome back, everybody, to another special episode of the 21.5 Professional Pilots Podcast. I'm Max, joined as always with Dylan.
Hey, guys.
We're here to talk about the Coronavirus Relief Act and what it means to professional pilots. We've all read the news and all these billions of dollars going to the airlines for relief, but what does that actually mean for professional pilots, namely airline pilots in this bill, right, Dylan?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of big numbers thrown around, and I honestly didn't even really know. Like, I knew the airlines were going to get a bunch of money, but I didn't know what they were going to be able to use it for. So we thought it'd be a good idea to actually dive into the bill. We should say right now that we're recording this on Thursday, March 26th at about 8 a.m. Pacific time. So for those of you that haven't followed the news, this bill just passed the Senate and is now going to the House.
Yeah, they're going to meet at 9 a.m. on Friday to vote on it in the House, which the sentiment is that it's expected to pass, right? But
that's what everyone's saying. And then Donald Trump is saying that he is going to sign it right away if it passes. So listen, we're not political experts on the political process, but I just think there's so much confusion. And
well, we were just talking last night about it. And we're like, what does this actually mean? And neither of us really knew. We've all read what you see on Apple News or wherever you get your news. So we thought we would just read it straight from the bill and offer opinions on what it means for us, professional
pilots.
Sure.
So we'll be really clear here. First, let's actually just read the bill and the data in the bill. And then after that, we'll give some speculation.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to read it word for word.
Yeah, right.
The total bill is 880 pages, but we're at subtitle B, Air Carrier Worker Support is what it's entitled, and it has some definitions and blah, blah, blah. And then it throws out the terms, you know, passenger air carriers in an aggregate amount up to $25 billion, cargo air carriers up to $4 billion. We've all read, and the contractors at $3 billion. So we've all read that. Of course, there's $100 million in there for administrative expenses.
It's perfect. So that $25 billion, what can they use that money for? Let's start there.
Okay. So of that money, it's very specific in here. All of the stimulus money can only be used for payroll, essentially, to support people's paychecks.
Yeah. The bill says the financial assistance shall exclusively be used for continuation of payment of employee wages, salaries, and benefits up to an aggregate amount of $25 billion for passenger air carriers and $4 billion for the cargo air carriers, and then $3 billion for contractors.
And it's interesting. So how do they figure out who gets how much money, right? So it says right here, an air carrier in an amount equal to the salaries and benefits reported by the air carrier to the Department of Transportation pursuant to Part 241 of Title 14 Code of Federal Regulations for the period from April 1st, 2019 through September 30th, 2019. So essentially what they're doing is taking payroll from last year during this time and going to provide that amount to support your workforce.
That's interesting. So with the seniority-based system, it's not going to cover 100% of the payroll.
No, it's not, but they're giving you money to cover most of payroll, which is the number one operating cost of an airline.
Yep.
So, which is pretty crazy. And here's what that is supposed to do. It's under Section 4114, Required Assurances. To be eligible for financial assistance under this subtitle, an air carrier contractor shall enter into an agreement with the secretary or otherwise certify in such form and manner as the secretary shall prescribe that the air carrier or contractor shall, this is the important part, refrain from conducting involuntary furlough or reducing pay rates and benefits until September 30th of 2020. So anybody that takes this money is prohibited from furloughing anybody till September 30th of 2020, which you have to make the assumption they're thinking that things will start to ramp up by that time and would avoid furloughs altogether, right?
I guess it's a kick the can down the road and we'll see what happens in September. I mean, this is what, the third stimulus bill already in the coronavirus age. And there's nothing that says there couldn't be a fourth. So maybe it goes till September and then the airlines are back knocking at the door again. Who knows?
Who knows?
But the club that they're going to have is basically, well, we're going to furlough after September. Now we've made payroll this far because you gave us the money. Now you better give us more money or we're going to furlough again. So it's hard to know. This buys us 6 months of waiting and seeing, basically.
Now, here's another section. Required considerations. When considering whether to exercise the authority provided by this section, the Secretary of Transportation shall take into consideration the air transportation needs of small and remote communities and the need to maintain well-functioning healthcare supply chains, including medical devices and supplies, and pharmaceutical supply chains. So we were talking about this last night. Of course, there's no mention in here of the regional airlines, but I don't know. I mean, they're getting stimulus money. You know, the regionals are paid on a fee per departure pay structure from their partner. So, but this just goes to cover payroll. So does that mean that then they have extra money that they have? And how does it take into consideration air transportation needs of small and remote communities, which again leads you back to the regionals serve mostly the smaller remote communities.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously you've probably heard about some of the other things limiting the executive compensation and the stock buybacks and some of those other limitations that are in there. That is probably
sure. And that
good language again, to have.
Great. Yeah, for sure. And it's what's been in the news and, you know, Mark Cuban and other people have been very vocal about that. But how does that actually affect us as pilots in the long run?
Yeah,
it's the health of the company. But right now, in the next 6 months, it doesn't, essentially.
Okay, so that was kind of reading from the bill. Now, let's set aside that. And this is all now just speculation here.
I wonder how much time the airlines have to indicate if they're going to opt into this. I mean, most I'm assuming will, but what's interesting about this is Southwest issued another no fly line kind of scenario where you get paid to sit at home. And now from a pilot's perspective, for some people, I think that depending on your individual situation and your thoughts on exposing yourself and the public and everything else could be pretty attractive. But now we're basically reducing flying, call it by half at least, right? Of all the major airlines, just as a rough number. But now you can't cut anybody's pay and nobody can be furloughed. So why would you take a 50% pay reduction when you're having the same amount of pilots cover half the flying, which would indicate you're probably not going to work as much anyway, and you're still going to get guarantee, right?
On the surface, that's the way it looks. Obviously, the devil's in the details and how they negotiate this because it doesn't make sense to me. In some way, I think it's good. Like you said, there are probably pilots that do not want to be flying. I think we heard this was hearsay, but someone on a conference call for the American Union was saying they recommended pilots over, I think, 55 or 60, maybe don't fly just because of their risk of exposure. So you have to wonder, seems like there's a percentage of it, the workforce that would not want to be working.
Yeah, they're a higher risk of having problems should they contract the virus. So it's just interesting to me to think about and be faced with this decision of taking a pay cut when now there's something that very well might be signed into law later this week that says that nobody can take a pay cut.
And how do you define well, I'm sure that for them too, it's not like it's a mandatory everybody has to take a halftime line or whatever.
No, it's voluntary.
And they'll say, look, it's all voluntary, so that it might be a way that they can do it. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear what our listeners think about this. Again, this is just developing right now, and we don't, you know, we're just in the middle of this, but just wanted to kind of discuss our thoughts and find out what was in the bill. So if you've got any insight on what you think about the way it's drafted, let us know. It's info at 215podcast.com or on the socials at 215podcast. I also wanted to talk a little bit about our old buddy in the news, Mr. Crandall, the CEO.
Yeah, that was
former CEO of American. Now, for those of our listeners that have been listening for a while, there's been one book that we have been talking about basically since we started this show, and it's called Hard Landings. And we kept saying you should read this book because it's going to teach you a lot about the industry. And the thing that basically I walked away from when I read this book a long time ago is anytime you're in the airline business and you're going, this is too good to be true, like watch out because
watch out.
The freight train is headed your way. So Bob Crandall, the CEO of American, he was a pretty controversial
former
guy. Yeah. Former CEO. I think it was in the 90s. Yeah. He's a pretty controversial guy. And I would not say pilots were a huge fan of him.
No.
Back in the day.
But he was kind of a hard charging businessman. And so CNBC, when they want to have a guest on to comment on airline stuff, a lot of times you see Bob Crandall come on Squawk Box or whatever. And so this was an appearance that he had that I saw, I sent to you.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. And he's talking about how these bailouts now are becoming a recurring event for these airlines in such short order. I mean, this started 3 weeks ago and everyone's faced with bankruptcies and mass layoffs and stuff. It just turned so quick. But they are deemed as a necessary part of the infrastructure of the country, meaning that we can't function very well without them. So, but we can't keep bailing out business. That's just not.
They've got the best of both worlds because there's like no regulation, but they get all the benefits of the bailouts.
Right. So what he was saying that was pretty insightful, I thought, is that there's going to have to be some sort of increased regulation because it's kind of like they were comparing it to utilities and how utilities are regulated because they're a necessary part of the infrastructure and this and that. And then Bob says, you know, he's thinking more of a regulation kind of like the banking industry where they have to have required cash reserves legally. And whether that's because the airlines, it's arguable if they haven't been very smart with all of their capital by buybacks and all of this other stuff they've done to dispose of their capital rather than keep it in the bank for times like this. But he was advocating saying there might have to be some sort of regulation like the banks where the airlines have to keep some sort of liquidity available for times like this or whatever. And boy, I don't know that I've ever been one to argue much for more regulation in certain things, but this is not good for the taxpayers overall, I don't think.
Well, and we were talking about too, it disincentivizes companies to be responsible. So there are airlines that I think are in much stronger financial position, like for example, Southwest, who seems like they've got a much more responsible debt load and cash on hand. And then they're competing against these other carriers that are buying back stock. You know, what I think, was it American put back 96% of their profits in stock buyback?
And they have more debt than United and Delta combined.
Exactly.
Which is crazy. That's why they had such a liquidity position so quickly is because they have these massive debt payments. And if you're not flying passengers currently and you don't have people buying tickets 2 or 3 months down the roads to keep that cash flow coming, it puts you in a serious financial position extremely quick.
And so that's the thing is like, if I'm their competitor and they're going to get bailed out right away, what's my incentive to run my business in a more conservative and responsible way?
Right.
So, and we're almost to the point where we're in a too big to fail situation.
You have to wonder what would happen if they just did nothing. Who would be left standing? It's a really tough problem. And the problem is, all of us are at risk, meaning professional pilots. No matter what they do here, it's arguable that the guys that are flying for less financially stable companies are at more risk for sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think so. Again, this is all speculation at this point. the major airlines basically have kicked it, will hopefully be able to kick the can down the road 6 months. But I think that the whole industry is going to basically have to be in a standstill waiting, because the major airlines hiring and furloughing seems to basically affect all of the different pilot job markets.
Oh, trickle.
So now it's like everyone's just going to be in a holding pattern. And if you're at the bottom of the list at American right now, it's weird because like you could see a potential of being furloughed, but you can't really do you.
What do you do?
Can't really leave your job yet.
Well, and the other thing, what if you're at Delta and they said we will emerge from this a smaller airline? So if you take the airline, even with all the retirements, they're telling you it's going to be smaller. You see the photos of all these parked jets and everything. Does that mean at the end of the day that they're still going to need the amount of pilots that they have on property? Or, and the answer is who knows, because nobody knows when this ends, what it looks like, how many guys are going to retire between now and then, how many are going to get sick. You know, God forbid some might die or lose their medical permanently. Who knows? It's just sit back and watch. And what I, one of my mantras when I came to the airlines is I promised myself I was not going to worry about stuff that I could not control, because at my last job, I had to worry about everything because I was in charge of everything from maintenance and scheduling and the pilots and the mechanics and all that stuff. Whereas now I revel, like I've said before, being in charge of very little, but you cannot worry about things you have no control of. And this is a big one of those. Now, does that mean you can't prepare like we've talked with James in the past and things? Absolutely not. But can you sit there and be up all night worrying about it? Easier said than done, but you certainly have to try and take that attitude of just, you got to roll with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the preparedness thing is important. If you didn't get a chance to listen to James talk about creating that budget, you know, the full-time line budget, the half-time line budget, and then the furlough budget, a lot of really great information came out of.
And well, you also look at like China. I was looking the other day because obviously they're way ahead of us on this progression of this virus. And I was like, did they shut down all of their domestic air travel? And from what I could see, they did not. Things were way cut back. But even China, and the thing, China, it's been a couple months there. And now they're starting to reopen restaurants. And everyone's like, oh, it's only a couple months. Well, look at the difference in the draconian measures that China took on quarantine. I mean, you're thrown in the slammer if you don't obey those rules there. So that is certainly going to have an effect on the longevity of this virus. But they didn't shut down their air travel domestically completely either. And they were basically locking people in their houses. So is there going to be a shutdown here based on that? You would have to think no, but certainly reductions. I'm on a trip right now and it's just insane to see the lows. You're just shaking your head. Like
it feels like you're back in your corporate days.
Yeah.
Two or three people in
there might be 30 people on the airplane, but over 10 of them are deadheading crew members. You're like, what are we doing?
Yeah. This is uncharted territory for sure.
It's nuts. Another part in this bill is under taxpayer protection. And it reads, I'm going to read it exactly because it's not very long and I think it's pretty interesting. The secretary may receive warrants, options, preferred stock, debt securities, notes, or other financial instruments issued by recipients of financial assistance under this subtitle, which, in the sole determination of the secretary, provide appropriate compensation to the federal government for the provision of the financial assistance. So we've read everything in the news about, is it going to be grants? Is it going to be loans? According to this, it says the secretary may receive all of those different financial instruments. So it's not very clearly spelled out to me in this, whether it's a grant or a loan. It just says, here's this money and we may take some preferred stock or debt securities or whatever to then pay ourselves back. Right?
I don't know.
It's just, I think it's interesting. You look in the news, it says all this stuff, and then you read the source document, which I don't think is it's not crystal clear.
No.
And it's open interpretation. So
exactly. Yeah.
And some subjectivity on what the secretary wants to do.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be very political on what happens. And I think the thing is too, is they may wait and see. obviously, if things rebound super quick, then that's probably going to be more of a reason that they're going to want to extract some value.
At the end of the day, when you're a dude who's an airline pilot.
Or a dudette.
Or a dudette.
Good. Dudettes are included.
Point. Absolutely. For you specifically, this is good news. Is it good for business? Is it good for the country? That's a whole nother issue. But what this means is that the government magically came up with a bunch of money from where that's a topic for another episode.
Oh man.
Probably not of our show, but you are going to get paid. You're not going to take a pay cut. At least, you know, through September.
If it all passes the way it's currently structured that we're reading it, then yes. But I think you definitely should be preparing.
So one other thing I just thought of. So everybody relates this money to United, American, Southwest, Delta, everybody that was penned that letter. But in here, it's nowhere does it say this money is only relegated to those airlines. So according to this, could SkyWest ask for money? Could Sun Country? Could all these other airlines that weren't on that letter ask for money?
So that was just kind of some of our thoughts. Of course, this is all speculation on the effects. You know, again, it's March 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific. So things are changing really quick. But I think it is important to understand what is actually in that bill. So, Max, before we go, little mini mailbag session. We got some feedback on our furloughs coming episode. Listener Mike sent us a little note here. I'll tell you what he's got to say here. Another good episode. Gotta say though, although there may be some opportunities, there won't be near enough to absorb the thousands upon thousands of potential furloughees. After 9/11, there were still jobs. Smaller carriers like Vanguard, Eastwind, ProAir, AirTran, ATA kept hiring a while. Almost all of the regionals were hiring as scope clauses fell to force majeure. Some pilots took the expat route while others went to fractionals and others to business jet operators. This time will be different because the regionals are feeling the impact just as much as anyone else. So are airline jobs worldwide, limiting expat. Corporate jobs will be down until the market recovers. Then I would expect them to thrive like they did after 9/11 due to security concerns. Just as your guest said, executives will want to fly in small groups of people they know. The scope is so significant that you can't help but look to those pilots who left the industry post 9/11. I would love to hear an interview with pilots like that discussing what types of non-aviation jobs they found and what challenges were associated with that decision. And that's from Mike. So thank you for the email, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, he makes some very good points. You know, from our personal experience, Dylan, remember when we were at American Eagle back then and all the flowback pilots that were from American that were flying at American Eagle, because that's part of their flow through agreement is during the bad times, it can flow the other direction. And that's because of exactly what Mike was saying, is that the regionals were picking up flying that was being left off at American. I remember they had those Fokker 100s. Remember they were just getting rid of all of those and we were just coming in covering all those routes. But now everybody's feeling the effect because there's nobody flying. So where do they flow back into? I think that's a good example right there, but he makes some good points.
He certainly does. Yeah. The business aviation, I think we will see an uptick there. I know people will want to be flying with known other passengers. I would love to be the person that develops the HEPA air filtration system for Gulfstream. They may already have it, but if you could advertise that kind of stuff, they'd love it.
And then we do have a couple people actually that we're on our list to interview that have done exactly that, right? That left aviation and pursued a different career. I mean, we have friends that have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're working I'm going to be talking to some of those people. I think it's a great point. 9/11 is the closest thing we have to compare to this. So I think talking to people about their experiences going through 9/11 is going to be really important. Again, James had some great advice for people in previous episodes about looking at your other skills, perhaps, and looking at ways that you might be able to leverage those skills to get some temporary income.
Which again goes back to what advice do you give your son if he's going to start flying right now?
Mm-hmm.
might be a good idea to get a degree in something other than aviation. Just saying.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We've got James coming up again. We're going to be going through all the news with him on Saturday night. So hopefully the bill will be passed by then and we can have some final thoughts to give and kind of talk more about the ramifications of it. If you've got any questions for him or us, hit us up. You know the email address and you know where to find us on social media. We can discuss those on the show. And one other thing.
Yeah, let's talk about all these episodes have been so serious lately.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have something in the works that is lighthearted, fun, will make you laugh, and reminds us all of why we are in this crazy business. We're coming out with a whole stories episode. So in light of that, we would like to solicit all of our listeners to contact us if you have a great, funny, serious, crazy, whatever aviation story that pilots find interesting. Reach out to us at info@215podcast.com. We'd like to contact people and have them tell their story.
We have all the equipment. We can just call you on your phone. You can be anonymous. Yeah. You don't have to say your name or anything.
If you're not up for that, feel free to email the story to us and we'll certainly read it on the air. But we figure you guys listen to us talk enough, so it might be nice to get a break.
Yeah, a full non-COVID-19 episode, I think, would be good for everybody. All right, before we go, we'd like to mention our sponsor, Harvey Watt Insurance. They are the largest provider of loss of medical insurance for professional pilots with over 75,000 pilots insured. Did you know that all loss of medical license is not the same? Each airline's union negotiates different coverage. So it's important to understand what your coverage provides and what optional coverages might still be out there for you. If you contact Harvey Watt, they can walk you through all of the information on what your coverage provides and where you might want to shore up your coverage. Visit harveywatt.com. That is going to do it for our emergency episode. Thank you so much. If you haven't had a chance to subscribe to the podcast, please do that if you can. It really helps us grow and share our message to the rest of the professional pilot community. And you can find out more information on the show at 215podcast.com. And until next episode, Max, remember,
flexibility is the key to air power. See you, everybody.
See you guys.
God.